People who love the sport can acquire jobs in stores to sell equipment or apparel and help others find the joy that they feel when they go snowboarding. A very brief history of snowboarding. The sport of snowboarding began on December 25, 1965. That's the day that Sherman Poppin of Muskegon, Michigan, went out to his garage, put two cross-country skis side by side, affixed them securely by screwing three cross pieces to them, one at the nose and two further back along the skis, and let his daughters, age 9 and 4, take turns standing and sliding down the snow-covered sand dune at the back of his house. When the neighborhood children clamored to be allowed to ride on his invention as well, Poppin realized he might be onto something big. He spent the next few months refining his invention, and in March 1966 applied for a patent for his surf-type snow ski. His wife came up with the name Snurfer, conflagrating snow and surfer. The Snurfer was licensed by a manufacturer and hit the market just in time for the 1966 Christmas season. The Snurfer consisted of a board 48 inches long, 8 inches wide, and a half an inch thick. The rear third had a shallow V bottom, and a rope was attached to the forward rounded tip of the ski. According to a November 5, 1966 article in the Muskegon Chronicle, snurfing with a capital dollar sign for the S, you ride it standing up and you ride perpendicular to the direction of travel, just as on a surfboard. Friction knobs on the forward and rear thirds of the board give your feet traction to keep from slipping off, and the rope attached to the front end of the board gives you fore and aft stability. The article continued. When you want to turn, you lean back a bit, lifting the tip of the ski with the rope at the same time. With your weight shifted to your rear foot, you lean slightly backwards if you want to turn right. Remember, you're riding perpendicular to the board, and a bit ahead if you want to turn left. With a shallow V at the rear, a subtle weight shift is all that it takes to change the direction of travel. The Snurfer was intended for kids, as the article made clear. In the first place, it's safe. Young riders aren't plunging headfirst downhill as with a sled, and they aren't sitting down with the possibility of spinal injuries. The Snurfer will travel on half an inch of snow, and its wide base and shallow V won't hurt grass like sled runners. It's economical, $5.95 to $9.95, depending on the model. And it's wonderful from the parent's point of view, because it comes completely assembled. Just take it out of the box and head for the hills. Over a million kids, teenagers, and adults did head for the hills for the next 15 years. The success of the Snurfer encouraged competition. In 1974, Dmitry Milovich, who'd been working on a snowboarding design of his own for many years, founded the Winterstick Company and started making the rounds of winter sports trade shows, such as SEIA, Snow Sports America, and that of the National Sporting Goods Association, NSGA, where there was little interest in his designs. Milovich continued his designs and sold a few boards, but his company went out of business in 1980 and he moved on. It was left to Jake Burton to power the snowboarding revolution. In 1977, 22-year-old Jake Burton Carpenter founded his company, Burton Snowboards, a company which now, 4 decades later, holds a 40% market share in snowboards and snowboarding accessories and offers over 61 snowboard models for adults, teens, and kids. Back in 1977, Burton's first snowboard offering, the Black Hill, was similar to a Snurfer in that it was also controlled with a rope through the upturned nose of the board to help with balance and steering. His design differed, however, in that there were straps to help keep the rider's feet on the board. Within months of the founding of Burton Snowboards in 1977, other pioneer snowboard companies came on the scene, including Sim Snowboards, Barfoot Snowboards, and New Snowboards. Progress was slow at first. Not only did the snowboard have to compete with the Snurfer, but ski areas were reluctant to let snowboarders on their slopes because of liability concerns. Snowboarders had to find other areas to ride, which gave birth to the halfpipe. More on that later. While Winterstick went out of business in 1980, the other companies persevered, and once the ski area providers came up with the assumption of liability, common sense should tell skiers and snowboarders that accidents and injuries were possible and that they participated in the activity at their own risk. The sport began to take off, and so did the snowboard business. Soon, there were enough snowboarders for organizations to be formed, not only in the United States, but around the world. And sponsored races with prizes were held on an annual basis.